to his driveway, brings up the ambulance and goes, "Hi, I'm living at this place. Yep, you'll know where I am. I'm on the driveway," and then passes out.
Wow.
That was it.
Yeah.
They come screaming over. He knew that if they spent time looking in the house, he could be dead. So yeah, he just waited on the driveway for the ambulance to turn up. The ambulance turned up, said, "Yep." So straight away, pumped the anti-venom into him, got him like oxygen and all that, got him going, and it saved his life.
Wow.
Sweet.
Welcome to Australia, man.
That's crazy.
You know, but apart from that, the weather's great.
In Magic the Gathering, offenses against the community are considered especially heinous. The dedicated podcast fans who investigate these crimes are members of an elite squad known as the Special Victims Unit. These are their stories.
Hey, Liz, you should totally put on your best Aussie accent.
Oh, mate. Really? Oh, mate. That's all this. This is mate. And, shush.
You know that's going on the beginning of the show. I'm sure Jason's going to throw that in
there. It's like, yeah, nah.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, nah. He's let Mike start. He's like, come on, every start, they keep talking. I'm trying to start it last
time. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, buddy.
I'm not even going to try and shut these guys up. Welcome to SBU Cast. I can't get a word in edgewise already with these guys. So welcome to SBU Cast number 5. And today, I'm not joined by my regular co-host, Josh. Sadly enough, he couldn't make it today. And let me tell you, it is such a pain in the ass to schedule guests that are actually from the future that we went ahead anyway. And so today on the SVU cast, we have Les Kershaw at Who Is Les, which I didn't know how to pronounce until just the other day. I'm always like, what is this at Hoozles guy? So I feel bad that I didn't figure it out until somebody mentioned it on Heavy Meta, and I'm like, boy, do I feel dumb. And opposing him, we have Mildy Vane, who refuses to tell anyone his actual name. So he's at Mildy Vane on Twitter, and he's here as well to battle Les for supremacy over Australia.
Why do you not think Mildy is my real name?
That's what you said last time, and I just refuse to believe. I know
you just
you're
don't
from...
realize. You don't realize that that's what they call people in the South Island of New Zealand.
Oh,
that's his first name, Mildy.
Oh, that's what you said the last time I pushed you on it, and I just refuse to believe someone would name their kid Mildy.
I think that there's a total of 2, possibly 3 people in the Twitter magic community that would know my real name.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like that's a secret agent.
This is that's... the proxy guy, Scotty
really?
Mack. I actually know there's 4th. There's Durfington, and then there is Marcel. Those
really?
Are
really? Marcel is coming on the cast pretty soon, so I'm going to nail him down. He'll probably tell us something entirely wrong, but we'll believe it anyway.
It's like Roboto is pretty much the only guy that knows what I do for a living. So.
Yeah, there you go. So welcome to the cast, guys. We've been trying to get you on for a little while.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, scheduling people that are like almost 24 hours in the future is a little rough. So
it's not my fault that you're from the past, okay?
Hey, you know, it's like 3:20 in the afternoon for me on Saturday, and it's like 9:20 in the morning for Les, and it's like noon for Mildy or something.
Oh, yeah. Just finished breakfast, and I was just telling Mildy, I just finished breakfast. I went to the local market this morning. We went and got some fresh bread and, you know, and had a coffee and came back and chilled out. Oh, and by the way, I've got tomorrow off. It's Australia Day.
Yeah. Australia has its own day?
Yeah. Hey, it's Waitangi Day next month on the 4th.
I know.
About that.
Waitangi Day is awesome. It's New Zealand Day. So, yep, we have our own days because we're so important to the world.
There you go. Well, I'm outraged that here in Canada we don't celebrate Australia Day.
Like Canada Day or Dominion Day.
Well, we do, but I'd like to get an extra day off, so we should celebrate Canada Day as well. Or Australia Day as well.
Why don't you just rock up to work? So I've got the day off because Australia Day.
In New Zealand, we also have province days. So each province has a different day. Mm. And they get that day off as well.
Awesome.
Which is the anniversary day. Yeah.
Do you get a show day off?
Show day?
Yeah, like, you know, we have like a big show. We call it Eka, which is like a big, like it's like a royal show. And so we get the day off.
Not that I know of.
Oh, man, you're missing out. Come over, man.
Don't get bit by spiders and snakes.
Oh, the spiders and snakes. Yeah, we're going to get there, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about Rico, you're listening in, buddy. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, this is all about Rico. Rico started the spiders and snakes. Now it's probably going to become some sort of weird SVU tradition that we talk about spiders and snakes.
Yeah, you got it.
That pretty much guarantees that Jay Bush will never listen to the cast, although he probably doesn't anyway.
He doesn't listen to nothing. He's too busy electrocuting
himself.
He doesn't
even listen to the A-Team.
He doesn't listen to himself.
That's because he's in it. I swear he wouldn't listen to any if he wasn't in one.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, Les, you're way over there in Australia.
Yes.
As far as I know, you don't live in, like, one of the main giant cities, right? You're a little bit more rural, or where the fuck do you live?
All right, I live in Brisbane, which is by the Gold Coast. So I'm about 20-minute drive, maybe 30-minute drive from the Gold Coast, and about a 30-minute drive from Brisbane City itself. I live in a shire called Redland Bay Shire, which is awesome. I love it, and I'm about 15-minute walk to the ocean. You know,
That's all right.
To the beach. I know that's the reason why I love this place, and I play Magic at my local game store. Shout out to Gauntlet Games over in Wyndham North, and I go there, and that's my local. So, yeah, it's sunny, man. It's hot.
It's winter everywhere else, and you're lounging around in a pool.
Oh yeah, man. I'll hit the pool later on because it's pretty good today, but be around about 35 degrees today. So. It's going to be warm. It's summertime. I can't wait to winter, and I want to get one of those hoodies, and I want to start rocking that.
Yeah, so. I saw the call for the hoodies went out, which was pretty awesome.
Exactly right. So, yeah, no, that's where I'm at. It's great. We've got, like, the Commonwealth Games coming over to Brisbane, and it's the theme park place in Australia to be, you know. So if you want to go to Movie World or Whitewater World or whatever you want to go to, whatever world you want to hit, we've got it. It's good, man. Cool.
So how far away is the LGS for you?
It's about a 30-minute drive.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. It's pretty good. I usually finish work and go home, say hi to the family, grab the cards, and I'm off, you know, and I'll hang out and you duel it around, you know, duel it up with some of the guys over at Wyndham North. So, yeah, it's good. But we're talking about Mildy and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. We've got about... in Brisbane, we've got around about 6 stores, around about.
Okay.
That run like Friday Night Magic, and also quite a healthy tournament scene here, which is really good, especially to the guys over at Good Games in the city. They run a very, very good tournament there. So yeah, it's good.
I've heard less than stellar things about Good Games.
Oh, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so you've got, I went to the one, I've been obviously the one here in Brisbane. I stumbled into the one in Sydney. I literally stumbled into it. I didn't know it was like.
Oh, magic.
Yeah. It's like
it just like calls you in. You don't even know why. I got to go in that store. I just feel it.
It literally did. I was like, I'm talking to a mate of mine and we stop. And I'm like, oh, hold on. I look to the left. I'm like. Oh, there's a Good Game. And I walk in. And he's like, where are you going? I don't know. I'm just walking in. And I walk in. And I go, ah, oh, I know the smell of sweaty guys playing. And, you know, and energy drinks being popped every 5 seconds. Yep, there's got to be a magic store. Walked in. Lo and behold, it's a magic store.
There you go.
Yeah, man.
So let's put it all out on the table. I mean, how good of a player are you? Do you do well? Are you dominating these places, or are you just like the rest of us and we all suck at Magic?
Yeah, man, I totally suck at Magic. You know, I'm
I'm glad.
Oh, no, I got.
I'm glad you're a brother because I'm not that great as well. So.
Nah, I suck at magic. Let's be honest. Let's just say that I've dream crushed a few people that you know that have rocked into like a GPT or I don't know, a PTQ or something, and they think, oh, look at this guy. Well, we'll go and play them. You know, he's got a funny accent. Let's go and see how they get what's all over. You know, I'm like, thanks, man, and I walk out the door. So yeah, I'm there for the fun. You know, I'm really there for the community part of it. My wife. When I moved over to Australia from New Zealand, you know, I'd been like, I'd only work, stay around home and so forth. And she said, you need to get out. And I'm like, get out, or like get out and meet people. And she went, no, get out and meet people. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, that's a relief.
And then I went, yeah. I'm like, whew. And one of the guys that where I work, he plays magic, you know, and he goes, he came up to me, that bastard. I thought I'd kind of kick the habit, but you know, he came up to me and said, oh, you play magic, don't you? I said, I used to, you know, way back when, you know, talking about like Homelands, Alliances, you know, Tempest, that type of thing. So
back when magic was pure.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Thank you, Mildy. That's exactly right. He said, why don't you come over? And I went, okay. So, and I think it was Scars of Mirrodin was just kind of coming in. I walked in, I went, oh, okay, this is pretty different. What are these planeswalkers and, you know, what's all this rubbish? Anyway, I got a starter pack, and that was it. I was hooked again. So, Gareth, I hate you. Simple as that.
You never really ever get out of magic. It's always there. Just takes a little, you know, it's a little temptation and you're right back in again.
Yeah, exactly right. And that was it. But the thing that I loved about it is I was just, you know, you can go into a store, you can start talking this universal language called magic, and you've got instant friends. You know, you talk to them and you chat, and that's what I'm all about. You know, and that's probably the main reason I made a cube was to do that. And yeah.
I always run out of things to say when I'm talking to non-magic people, because if I've just met them and I'm just like, oh yeah, they're like, okay, run out of things. But if I'm talking to someone who knows magic, I can just talk for hours about magic.
Yeah. Well, that's.
Well, no, because you learn to do other things there. Oh, how's the footy?
Oh, this weather's been fun. Just like twiddle my thumb.
Well, that's what got me into magic in the first place. Is pretty much all of my friends were playing it and had played it for a long time, and I don't know, I just didn't have any interest in it. But one day, I just literally just snapped, and I'm just like, I can't take it anymore. What the fuck are you guys talking about? I have to learn it, and screw all you guys. And I started buying magic packs, and then I'm just like, ah, frig. I'm in. I'm just there's no getting out now. There's no getting out.
You got
now.
Addicted to the crack.
Yeah,
to the cardboard crack.
Cardboard crack, man, you're stuck.
Just couldn't take it anymore. Couldn't listen to any more talk of 2/2s and 1/1s and counter spells. I'm just like, oh man. And I'm standing there like an idiot, nodding like I know what I'm talking about. And, yeah, just horrible. I blame all my friends for my magic addiction. Yeah, so, Les, you mentioned moving from New Zealand to Australia. What made you move?
Well, my wife is Australian. My dad was Australian, and so she's got family here. And I was like, well, you know what? Let's go. You know, we'd been together for about at the time. You know, about 16 years or something, you know, and I said, and I think everyone knew that we were going to move. I don't know. It was just one at the time, you know, I was getting a bit hacked off with the weather. You know, it's always raining. There's a reason why New Zealand is so green, because it rains all the time. And,
it's not a bad thing. I like the rain.
If you don't like the rain, you better not come to BC. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's awfully green here too, man.
I like rain, but I don't like rain, like all the time. Rain. Oh. 2 weeks in a row. Well, rain.
Okay, I will agree. The North Island is really bad for it. Like, when you wake up, it's raining, and you go to sleep, and it's still raining. It'll be like that for weeks.
Yeah, I know. It's like
at least in the South Island, it'll like, or in Dunedin, you get all four seasons in the same day. You wake up, it's raining. Then it'll start snowing, and then it'll be sunny at night.
In the South Island, it's like, Dear Diary, it's been raining and it's cold. And then Dear Diary, the next day, it is sunny, but it's cold. And then, you know, it's all, what's the common denominator? It's freaking cold, man. It's like, it's always cold in the South Island. I went there and I'm like, yeah, I'm over this.
Oh, I'm currently sitting in shorts and a t-shirt.
In front of a fire.
No, with my windows open and my door open.
So if Mildy just disappears later, we'll know he got kidnapped and...
Well, no, because we do this, like...
Came in
people
to open doors
yeah.
to rob him, and that he's just gone.
No, they don't rob people over in South Island. It's good, I got to admit. They, you know, can leave your cars in the, you know, your
they
key
do
in
that
car.
In Auckland. With
oh, don't talk about Auckland.
So Les, I can gather from your Skype picture, you must be a family man because you got the cutest kid ever in your Skype picture.
Oh yeah, that's my nephew. I loved it. I love that photo. I definitely am. My kids are growing, man. They're like, one's 22, the other one's turning 18 this year. So
wow,
you know, yeah, I'm like, I'm not even old. We had our kids like when we were really young, man. That's what you do in New Zealand. You know, there's no decent TV on at the time, so you know, what do?
It's raining a lot, things. So you just start making kids.
That's right, man.
Especially if you, and because there's so many small towns in New Zealand. Where there's nothing else to do.
So, yeah.
Half the people I went with high school now all have kids because there was nothing to do in that town.
It happens.
And that's where you're supposed to put an LGS, man. Yeah. That's where you're supposed to put like a magic tournament where they got nothing to do except that, and they go, you know what? You need to get out and breathe or something. I don't know. Get out there.
That may actually be the success model for the LGS where I live. Because we're in that small coastal town, not much more to do, and you know what? You offer something for the kids, and they're all there. So that maybe that's
yeah. But you see those photos; you guys are doing so well there. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
I think you're the Kajudo place of the world at the moment.
We hold all the Kajudo records at the moment.
Yeah,
like worldwide, we've had the biggest events. Like the biggest five events are all ours. We had last night. We had ladies' night. I was posting stuff on Twitter. We had more people.
Yeah, you had people skyping and playing from all around. Yeah,
we had more That's people insane. At ladies' night than most people get at their events.
Like ladies' night. That's amazing.
Well, we're trying to grow the girl side of thing, right? Because we had 138 people show up to our biggest event, and 30 of them were girls. So we're like, well, obviously there's some growth that should happen. So we're trying to push that. Give them a kind of a little non-threatening place to come and play and learn how to play the game, right? Because the boys can get kind of overwhelming and pushy, and a lot of our players are young, so they're a little intimidated.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, that's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah, no, well, that's the key, right? You find a thing that the kids like to do, and you just run with it, and
it's
pretty good. But yeah, we are kind of the Kaijudo. The Kaijudo central of the world. Lots of people that are into Kaijudo would just love to be able to travel up here and play.
I know, right? That'd be awesome.
It's totally held the first Kaijudo Pro Tour there.
it's the ultimate almost like dick tease, right? Because we're Kaijudo central, but we're so isolated, nobody can get there. It's like this nirvana that everybody wants to go to, but nobody can get there because it's so expensive. And it's like, oh...
Again, that'd be so awesome though. It'd be like, okay, we're gonna have the pro tour of Kaijudo is gonna be in Prince Rupert, and they're like,
well, that's the running joke for us is that like they do hold a what they call the Kaijudo, like not every place, but throughout North America they pick people to host Kaijudo Master Challenges, and the winner gets an invite and a ticket to the championship. For that season, they run a sort of summer and a winter champs. One the summer one's always in Seattle, and then the winter one kind of rotates. And so the joke is that how big does Prince Rupert's game meta have to grow before they just decide to host it there, no matter what it costs to fly people in?
Because
we're already hosting 140 person events. You know, the next one will probably be 175, then 200. I mean, we're just growing and growing. You know, like sooner or later,
bigger than the tournaments themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, like sooner or later, they just can't ignore us anymore, right? So, yeah, it's going to be fun. That's for sure.
You should take the idea from the, you know, from the drunk train and just have like the Kaijudo train and like have it go all the way through North America and in Canada and then all stops at where you are. That'd be sweet.
Can you imagine just a gaming train that just travels and, you know, you get on at one end and you travel to the other and you just play?
We've got a couple of GPs that are happening down in Sydney and Melbourne, and some of the guys, I kind of planted the seed that maybe we should like jump on the train, and it's like a, I don't know, it's like a 12-hour train ride or something, you know, so we should do that, and then we're just like, we could just draft and play all day.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Get to Sydney and then go to the GP, so we're definitely wanting to do that, so.
That sounds like an awesome idea.
Yeah, I was thinking that'd be pretty cool, man. And all of them are quite keen for it, you know, because they all don't have all the money in the world to go fly everywhere, you know. So right. A train would be quite neat. You know?
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, man. Usually stuff like that, all it takes is like the one or two guys that organize stuff, right? The go-to guys that make ideas happen.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So yeah, that's it. So apart from that, got into Magic playing. And then I got into Cube, and that was it. I love it. And that was me, and that's how I kind of got into proxy making.
Well, I was just going to ask you, so what drew you into the whole art scene? Because clearly you can proxy like a motherfucker, and people love what you do, so.
That is what got me into it, was Cube. I'd build a cube. I think like everybody that's built a cube, that, you know, kind of get stuff that's lying around, you put it all together and you go, yeah, I've got a cube, and you go to your local game store and play it, and everyone goes, that was kind of boring. And I was like, yeah, that was kind of boring. No, I'm trying to spice that shit up, you know. So I'm thinking, well, I looked at my bank account and I don't have enough to go buy power, and then I saw a lot of work from Josh, the proxy guy.
Yeah.
And other places, and I think we talked about it the last time we were on, like on the very first one. Oh, well, this is our returning cast. That's really cool.
That's right. Buddy. You betcha.
Second time round, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you actually, and, you're the only guest that have been on twice. There you go.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! But yeah, so we got into it. I decided I was just going to just, you know, make some, but I want to do it properly. There are a couple of guys that had like a cube here locally, and it was just photocopies, you know. And I'm like, nah, this isn't right. You know, this is you. If you want to play, I remember, you know, people playing, you know, with power, and it looks so beautiful, it looks so great. So I did that. I decided, you know what, I'm gonna make my own, and I learnt, and a lot of trial and error and late nights, and I got it, man. I got it going, looking pretty good. And I thought, well, I'm gonna do that, and that's how I got into it. And it's gone from, you know, from on and up, I guess.
So did you have a background in art things before that? Because I know that's not what you're doing for a living, so.
No, definitely not. I studied art and stuff at school because, like, I was useless. The only thing I did at school was, like, go play sport and hang around in the art studio and kind of do nothing. I know how to use computer programs and stuff, so that was pretty cool. But I got to admit, if it wasn't for the help of everybody in the community, then it wouldn't have been close, you know. Like the proxy factory that we've got over in over on the G Plus is awesome, you know. It's very welcoming. People that start up, you know, say, oh, this is my render, I just want to try that, and people go, I love it, add this, add that, it's going to be better. And it's just a really, really positive community that something that Josh has built, you know?
Yeah,
and
I really give a lot of credit to Josh for that, because he's taken, you know, he's taken a problem, which is really finding a healthy environment to do this in, because, you know, he's always talking about how bad Reddit is, and we all know that you know, those communities suck
what
ass.
What do you mean? Reddit is totally not the ass crack of the internet.
And, you know, right. Even other forums and stuff, like, you know, you just don't get that supportive community. So, you know, good for Josh to just take that problem and flip it over and say, you know what, I'm just going to create a community that's all open and friendly and helpful, and let's take our artwork to another level. I mean, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, he, you know what, he is the most humble motherfucker out there, because he does not want to go, you know, oh no, that's not me, it's not me. And I had a bit of a talk on Twitter, I don't know if you guys read that, just saying how much he's done, and just by openly sharing his knowledge and his experience just to help other people. And this is the reason, this is the positive side of doing proxy. The negative side, obviously, is that counterfeit side, and people do that because I want to make money. But, you know, this side is, it's just for the love of the game, you know.
Well, and that really, it really shows through in the work that's being done, right? That love of just the art. You'd never get proxies that good. If you were only trying to make money, well, you'd only need to make them so good and then be done with it. Whereas,
yeah, you know, I think there's a good line between a proxy and a counterfeit card.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
Because, I mean, you guys are trying to make them, you know, just, you know, a standalone art piece. And I just blows me away when I look at the stuff that gets posted. I'm just like wow. Like that. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, back to Josh, he is the most humble guy I know. He doesn't want to take any credit for any of that. But, I mean, he built that community. He started it. I mean, everyone has a hand in building it. But, I mean, he's the man. And I feel like sometimes I just want to shake him and be like, take some credit, damn it.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, if he wasn't so damn tall, I'd go up and just slap him, you know, and say, hey.
Well, maybe if you stood on my shoulders, maybe we could slap him in the knee.
Yeah, like
because he's like 30 feet tall. Right? Yeah, he's like way up there.
Yeah, like they 6'3", and he's like, and you're a tall guy too, Mike. I was like,
they had scarf that he got for Christmas that he's so in love with. I mean, they probably had to shear like 80 sheep just to make the wool for it.
I couldn't even wear that in our wintertime here. That thing is just ridiculous. That's so cool. I mean,
but your wintertime there is like what? 29 degrees compared to the 35?
Shut up.
I just laugh at how long that scarf is. Like if Josh is like stuck like on the fourth floor of a burning building, he just unravels it and ties it and climbs out the window.
I wonder if he could use it like if he goes four-wheel driving, he could use that. Like if he gets stuck and he needs to go, you know, get out of a bog or something, he could wrap that around, and then or what else could he do? Like if a mummy was like running out of like bandages, you know when it was coming out of the tomb, he could use that just to wrap the whole thing again. You know, it's amazing.
It's a utility scarf, awesome. Man.
I know, right? Oh man, he could swing from building to building.
Scarf man.
Anything. So yeah, but the proxy community is healthy. It's growing. I mean, I remember when Josh was talking about it, and I've done a few articles on his website, on his proxy site, just talking about different techniques and stuff like that I'd learned and used. And then when he made the proxy factory, he created it. It was kind of like, you know, like it kind of morphed from his GPOS page. You know, there was about, I think there were about 10 members in there. Now there's like 235 or something crazy like that, you know. Yeah. So it's growing, man. And now they're starting to join in on the competitions, you know, on the weekly, or not weekly now, but like on the themes, you know, like the Star Wars one that's just come out. Amazing. Lots of people are getting into it, you know. And for me, I'm a bit of a Star Wars fan. I'm a Doctor Who fan. I'm a superhero fan. So I love that stuff, you know. And some of the work that people make is amazing.
Well, and I really think it's great that he's exploring, you know, options of changing, you know, the prize structure a bit so that new people coming in without the same skills as you guys are still going to be able to, you know, get in there and fight for some prizes and kind of like an amateur division kind of a thing. I don't think he's worked out all the details yet, but... Yeah, I think that'll only help it grow that, more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think my skill set's crap. I honestly do. I thought, why
are people say that?
Compare your skill set to my skill set, and then you'll find out that your skill set is better.
All artists do that. They're like, oh, this is crap. I hate it. And some guy be like, I'll give you $1,000 for it.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah. You know, like, all artists are like that.
Mine would be worse than Kevy's ones. If I was to do it,
hey, I got a customized Kevy avatar.
Yeah,
I'm pretty jealous. I don't have a customized Kevy one. I mean, come on.
That's right. You guys better be jealous. You guys better be jealous. No one's got that. I'm like, the moment he posted, he goes, "And this is for you." I said, "Done, man. I'm gonna take this."
Apparently, you just have to send him free stuff, and then he'll draw you one. I think that's how it works.
Being is 2013. Being Kivi is 2014.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, it breaks my heart when I think it was last year, and he was talking about, and he was sending photos and stuff of him cubing, you know, and he had some cube stuff, and I'm looking at the photos and like, mate, I'm gonna send you something that just powers up that cube because it's just wrong. So, and that was my Christmas gift. You know, that was like my good deed. You know, I thought, you know what, I'm gonna do this, and I said, Kevy, here it is. This is for you. And he just went, no. I knew he was like, whatever. You're just sending a photo of some stuff that you made, and you're just trying to make me feel good. And then when it actually turned up, which I was really happy that it turned up to his place, he just flipped out, and I didn't not expect that. I thought he'd just go, thanks.
Oh, that's no.
You know, but, that's, yeah, so it was cool. It was awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, Mike, so when you watch Lord of the Rings, it's because when Millie and I watch Lord of the Rings, it's, to be honest, it's just a documentary on home.
Right.
And you kind of know those areas, you know. Like,
sure.
I went to Hobbiton and I watch, you know, I've seen it and all that. So that's really cool. But what do you guys see? Do you guys look at it and you go, that's got to be your computer animated, you know, CG everything or what?
No, I mean, I know enough about that area to know that, you know, the scenic stuff is
I don't know, you
there,
confused
right?
The Shire with Isengard?
Well, there was that. but I know enough to know that the whole reason they film it there is because the scenics are true, right? I mean, you can't reproduce that stuff in a computer, so.
No.
You know, obviously there are parts of it, the whole Isengard stuff and those kind of scenics, there's some touch-up being done. But, I mean, yeah, those vast sort of running through the mountains or whatever, like I just assume that those are all real because that's the reputation that New Zealand has.
Mm.
It also has the reputation of orcs everywhere.
Well, no. I hope not. That'd be awesome. That'd be a great story. That would beat Les's snake story. You know, if you told snake a story, story. You're going, you know, you're going down to the LGS for cards and an orc jumps out and grabs you, well, that's better.
Well, not orcs, but stormtroopers. My brother, he was living in Wellington quite a few years ago, and he's like a dancer, you know, he does like shows and stuff like that, and with this troop of guys. Anyway, this person came up to him and went, "Hey guys, how you going? Really like your show. Would you guys like to go to Sydney for the weekend? We want you to try out for a little movie." And they went, "Yeah, okay." They said, we'll buy the ticket. You just need to go over there and say a few lines. But you have to wear like a full body stocking. Now these guys are quite muscly and they're not shy about that. So they went over. My brother's ringing me up, going, "Hey, these guys are going to Sydney, and they're doing some, you know, something for a little movie." I went, "Sweet!" Anyway, they go there. They said they went to the place. They said, "Could you please get into this full body stocking?" And I said, "Yep, okay." They had that, but they had things on the body stocking, like markings and stuff like that. And then they had to stand there, do different poses, look around, and do, you know, like a lot of, you know, like a lot of movement, like they're in the army and so forth. And they went, "Okay, that's fine." Then came back, found out that they were that it was actually casting for Star Wars.
Nice,
awesome.
And yeah, and you actually one of those guys. If on Attack of the Clones, one of the guys, he is in it. He in the clone, you know, where all the went to the planet and they're all the clones and they're all like learning how to be soldiers and stuff. Yeah, he's
right.
On that.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that was him. Oh no, I'm like, "Did you know what you're doing?" And he goes, "No."
Nope. No, no, they'd idea. They'd never want to let on ahead of time, right? So I guess we should. We should talk to this Mildy guy. See what he's all about.
Come on, Mike.
Flying up.
No, you be quiet now over there, you bloody
you
kangaroo
some...
fucker. Kangaroo fucker.
Jesus, I'm not that fast. Come on now.
I'm surprised you were going to go there considering how much grief I get for calling you a sheep fucker.
Yeah, well, I knew you were going to do that.
Yeah, I can't take it. I can't give it back because, like, I'm a Kiwi as well. So, you know, I can't be ragging on my own people.
I, you know, it was very hard to resist calling you one when we're talking about how lonely it is and there's nothing to do. And I'm just like, yeah, but there's all those sheep.
Touche.
So Mildy, who is this Mildy Vane guy? Like, what the hell?
No one in particular.
No one in particular. Well, I mean, you're there in New Zealand. What do you do? Are you in school or you work or what?
I just finished schooling. I got a bachelor in information technology.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. And I'm currently a junior GIS technician.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah. I trust me, you don't want to be bored with the details of what that actually means.
So what kind of work are you hoping to get?
Hopefully, well, my passion is in IT security.
Okay.
And like that's my outside of magic, that's my main hobby. So ideally, what I would prefer to be would be a penetration tester.
Whoa, yeah, baby! I'm sorry.
Or as it's better known, as a pen tester.
All right.
Which is just basically people who get paid to, quote unquote, hack into places.
Sure.
So do you have like soft music and candles and stuff in your room?
Do you loop them up before you penetrate them? Is that how that works? Continue. Talk to us about how you penetrate.
Okay, that's why people call it pen testing.
Oh, I see. To avoid the inevitable sex joke.
Yeah. But if I just said I want a pen test, then you would have just made jokes about I want to test if pens work.
Well, that's cool.
Before we go on, Mildy, does the New Zealand badminton team still call themselves the Blackhawks?
I would have no idea, but I'm guessing so.
They're my favorite. That's my favorite national team. The New Zealand badminton team call themselves the Blackhawks. That is awesome.
Continue. They better have really awesome jerseys.
I would have a civil on it. Okay. In New Zealand sporting teams, there'll be two things that are common with everything. They'll either be black or white in the name, not like they'll be black or white people. So it'll be the black socks, the black, or, you know, the all blacks.
Yeah.
Which is the basketball ones. And then all of them will have a silver fern on them somewhere.
Yeah. And because they have the shuttlecock, they put their name forward that they were going to be called Blackhawks. And I think the international badminton government body or whatever didn't quite like it. And the whole country went, why not? So, and I say, why not, goddammit? Yeah. They should be called the Blackhawks.
So all the sporting teams are either black or white?
Yeah. Yes. Wow. So it's all white. It's normally, if it's white, it's normally the female equivalent. So like the all white the female rugby players.
And the soccer team?
Yeah, the soccer team, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I don't follow sports that well.
Oh, shame on you.
What a surprise. A Magic player who's into computers doesn't like sports.
No, right?
I mean, it's not like that's a stereotype or anything.
Oh, no.
Hey, like energy drinks,
doesn't
right?
mean I don't play them. I just don't really follow them competitively. I wonder what's... Like, people play sport. Oh, what's magic than playing that instead? Much more enjoyable than watching people kick a ball backwards and forwards.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, rugby is still more enjoyable than NFL, though. That's like 20 minutes of action.
No shit. Oh, my God. They start talking about NFL on Twitter. I'm like, really? Come on, man. Talk about rugby. It's so much better.
Yeah, on average, a three-hour game of like the Super Bowl will have 22 minutes of actual action.
Oh, somewhere I think Nina's eye is twitching or something.
No, man. Me and Nina. Shout out to Nina. See,
Nina. You're going to shout her out after you just trolled her for the last 2 hours.
Didn't troll her at all. We were having a reasonable and fair discussion on a format that she doesn't like anymore because they banned her favorite card.
So what else do you do there in New Zealand? Like, whereabouts in New Zealand are you, if you don't mind saying?
In the South Island, in Dunedin, which is...
Dunners,
yeah. Which is small-ish. Or it's biggest in terms of New Zealand, but it's small in comparison to the rest of the world.
Ah, there you go. Okay. Awesome. And have you lived there your whole life?
No, I've lived in the North Island for 80% of my life in the
Where?
Above Whangarei in a place called Hokorinui.
Hokorinui?
Yep. Which is right near Hikarangi.
Oh man, you're butchering this, but keep going.
No, I'm not! That is the correct way to say Hikarangi and Hokorinui.
You're just making words up now.
I lived there for many, many years. I know the correct pronunciation.
You're just making shit up.
You should tell them the place that Rove likes the most. Have you know that one? Do you know that place where he loves to go to?
No, which one?
Whakatane.
Yeah, Whakatane.
Yeah, because they always love to go to Whakatane.
Right next to Whangarei is Whakapara.
Oh, Whakapara.
Yeah.
This is true, Mike. It's actually real. These are real places. Yes. And
it's
and
American pronunciation.
I and would that's never how, doubt that's how we Mildy. Roll. Mildy would never steer me wrong.
No way.
Okay, Liz, how do you say the main city that's above Auckland?
Main city above Auckland?
Yeah.
There is no main city above Auckland.
What's the next biggest city above Auckland? So if you're going from Auckland to Cape Reinga, what city do you have to go?
Is it
starts with Whangarei? A W.
Not Whangarei.
Yeah, Whangarei.
Yeah.
Do you say it's Whangarei or Whangarei?
Whangarei.
Yeah. Because people butcher that one.
Oh, yeah, they'll butcher that all day long. You know, it's like, damn them. You know? Or people go to Rotorua when it's Rotorua. Yeah. Or they... Oh, by the way, yeah. Okay, all you guys that are listening out there, put your wives on because they love listening to this stuff, I'll tell you. Put your girlfriends on. This is how you say it. And that is why everyone rolls. That's just awesome in New Zealand.
You betcha. Yep.
That's why all the stormtroopers are like all Maori because, you know, they wanted some good-looking guys in those suits or Star Wars. So just saying. Just saying.
There you go.
Shout out. Shout out.
So, Mildy, where do you usually play Magic? What's your local game store?
My local game store is Argon Hobbies, which has had some news came out in the last couple of days that the owner, who's been running it for the last couple of years, is actually selling it.
Oh.
Because, yeah, well, it's because he's had only days off over Christmas, and he has a family, and he wants to spend time with his family.
Yeah.
So he's selling off so he can spend more time with his kids.
Yeah, totally.
It's understandable.
You got to respect that. I know with...
But it is
know...
just sad that if the new owner isn't as awesome as him, because he's easily the best LGS store owner that I've ever met.
Well, that's good. It's always good to have a good LGS. There's so many horrible, you know, stories out there of bad ones. It's nice to recognize the good ones when you find them.
So, yeah, that's me.
There we
go.
So...
Yeah, that's me.
Before we get, you know, we don't want to run out of time here, but we gotta start telling some spider stories, some wildlife stories. I think Les is the man to go to since he lives in Australia, and apparently nothing everything there is deadly.
Well, yes, it's true. It's like little spiders will come and they'll just kill you, you know. I'm just talking about. I think we were talking before about Rico and his stories of when he came over to Australia. And I can absolutely say they're all true. Absolutely true. I remember when I first moved over here and Kim and I, my wife, were walking. We're having a walk, you know, and where we live is like it's in a bush kind of rural type area. Not you know, in the bush, but, you know, it's kind of rural. And we're walking and all of a sudden... There's this massive snake, and it was huge. It was about, it was around about 6 foot. That's usually average, and it scared the crap out of me, man. I'll tell you.
I don't know how you guys live in a place like that.
Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, when I have friends and they come over, and they're looking everywhere, you know, they think that a spider that's going to absolutely, like, kill you with one bite, it's going to be like in the corner of the room. Sometimes it is, but not usually. You know, if you keep tidy.
I like being able to go to the toilet and not have to expect everywhere around the toilet to see if there's a spider before I go. I'm sorry, but I like that fact.
Yeah, but they're always there. I mean, I've seen the spiders that, like, will trap a bird, you know, and then they just go and they, like, the bird is wrapped up in the web and, you know, and it's feeding off it. Seen those. I've seen they're not deadly, but I've seen koalas are outside my house, you know. And at night, All the birds are gone. You know, like about 5, 6 o'clock, not a single bird because all the bats come over. And so we've got bats flying around at night everywhere. So, yeah,
see,
man.
We have cutesy deer that come in our yard, and, you know, they will literally eat apples out of your hand and stuff. So, you know, we kind of got the equivalent of the koala thing going on here. But we don't have deadly friggin' animals that come and hide in your toilet
oh,
and
we
wait
have
for you
possums.
To sit down. Because I'm telling you, if I go and sit down somewhere and there's spiders around the toilet, that's a deal breaker. I'm fucking gone. I'm out of there.
They, if you just don't disturb them, if you start poking at them, you know, and you go, look at that, it's a web. Let's go see what it is. And you stick your finger in, of course it's going to get bitten. Yes, you're going to go. You know, you're going to go to hospital, and the people at the hospital are going to go, yeah, you tried to put your finger in.
I refuse to share my toilet time with spiders. I draw the line. That's it.
I think that's perfectly fair, Mike.
That's it. I draw the line. My wife, you know, she's like, oh, we should go to Australia. If I tell her these stories, that's it. We're never going there.
Come over to Australia, man. It's fine. It's fine.
I like it here in Canada.
But the spiders,
you know,
the snakes are fast. When they get ugly, oh, man, when they get riled up and they start coiling up, you know, get out of there. Just don't, you know. Like one time I was doing proxies, and it was at night, you know, because, like, everyone's asleep and so forth. So I'm like, where I do the proxies, which is, like, in my lounge area, there's, like, a big window, you know? I'm kind of trimming and doing all these things, and I kind of, in the corner of my eye, I see, like, this movement on the window, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And I look over to the right, and I swear there was this huntsman spider bigger than my hand was just on the window. Like, just there, looking at me. And I'm like, that's not cool. And then, so I kind of move my hand to my right, and it moves to the right on the window. And I'm like, oh, that's not cool. And I kind of move it to the left, and it moves to the left. And I'm going, oh, my God, it's like looking at me like for dinner. You know, the only thing between me
maybe
and
maybe it's really like proxies.
Spider.
Maybe he needed a proxy for his cube.
Maybe he did. Maybe he needed a proxy. Maybe I don't know.
Maybe but he was wondering why you weren't making a proxy of spider spawning.
Oh, well done.
That would have been a great story if you were actually doing that and then the spider's there.
Oh, I can't remember. I couldn't remember that. That and what else? Oh, yeah, and then it kind of gone and moved off and went to go hunt little animals, no doubt.
Or small children.
Put your children away. Had a snake under the car. You know, you kind of go to the car. I left it out. My fault. I shouldn't have left it outside and not put it in the garage. And I'm kind of walking to the car, and you kind of hear the sound, and you kind of go, ah, crap. I kind of look at my shoes, and I go, yep, I've got shoes on. I don't have jandals on, so that means it can't bite my toes. I kind of walk away slowly, look underneath, and there it is. Obviously, because the car was warm, and it was trying to stay warm, so... Yeah, it was a big one. But you leave it. You just let it go. It'll hang out, and then when it wants to leave, it'll leave. You know, don't try and pick it up and move it around, because you'll just be in a world of hurt.
So what you're saying is that the snakes and the spiders actually live in Australia, and you guys are just at their mercy.
The visitors, man. That's all we are. We're just in their way. You know, we have seasons. Like, especially in the summertime, it can be quite, you know, there's quite a few around. I mean, obviously, if you're in the... if you're in the city, you know, urban areas, not as much. But I mean, the trade-off is I'm next to a beach, and you know, I can just relax when I want to.
Yeah, so, you bet. You
know, that's it. One story, if I can quickly talk about it. I was at work. I get a call from work, and then again, I work in computers, and that's all I can talk about. But they go, oh, one of the computers are gone. I'm like, sweet, I'll come over. So it's in this kind of location. So I go there, and I'm working away. And then all of a sudden you hear this rattle, 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 rattle in the ceiling. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And one of the guys goes, mate, that's just one of the guys. He's just trying to get some of these carpet snakes out of the ceiling. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, don't worry, mate. That'll be good. So I'm like... All of a sudden, I'm like picking up the pace, you know, I'm like thinking, okay, this is done, that's done, that's done. Okay, I'm good, I'm ready. And all of a sudden, these snakes start coming out of the corner of the room, up the ceiling. and they start dropping down, like, you know, like Indiana Jones, you know, when he goes to the pit full of
yeah,
snakes,
you
they
bet.
Start falling down. See ya! I'm gone, man. I'm like, out of there. I was like, ah, no. And we can hear, yeah, mate, I got him. I got them all. I'm like, forget it.
Oh, you missed the perfect chance to quote Snakes in the Plane. It's too many motherfucking snakes in this motherfucking room. I'm leaving.
I'll get the fuck out of here. Like, I was like, it was so funny. But you get used to them, but at the same time, they still scare the crap out of you. But when you have them on your hand, like on your arm and stuff, man, you can just feel the power in each of those, you know, and the snake is just amazing, you know. Those are the stories, or some stories.
So what about you, Mildy? Any deadly animals in your workplaces that you need to fight
yeah,
off?
Yeah, was there a rapid sheep? Or,
possums, I guess. Possum? a bull coming at you?
Oh.
Like, it's one of the reasons why you live in New Zealand, is that there's nothing that can really kill you.
Scumbag stories. Give us a scumbag story.
Oh, Mildy. You got to have a scumbag story, Mildy. You play a lot of Magic. Come on.
Yeah, man. I got one, but I want you to start talking about it.
Well, you go first, and I'll think of one.
Okay. Okay. I'll tell you this scumbag. Well, it wasn't really a scumbag story. It was actually a funny story. I was at the Innistrad pre-release, and I went to the 10 o'clock one. I think it was like, you know, it's like the 10 o'clock, you know, gentlemen's hours. And there's no way. I'm not going to be going there at midnight and so forth. Anyway, get to 10 o'clock one, and these guys that have been at this local university that they're playing in the map, and they've been going since midnight, you know, obviously the midnight release, and they've been playing, so they've been playing all night, all morning, and they got, obviously it was like the second one, and they're really tired. You can tell these guys are tired. You know, I'm playing this guy. I say, how you going? My name's Les. How you going? And they go, oh, yeah, good. How you going? You know, I'm talking to this other guy, and the other guy next to me is like really like agitated, you know, like any, you know, when someone says pissed off and they're doing nothing, you know, everything they go, oh, no, no, and they'll throw their cards down and stuff. Oh, you can't do that, like this. Anyway, this guy, I was like halfway through the game, all of a sudden the guy stands up and he goes, oh, back in hand, you guys. And he gets his deck of cards, here's your first deck, drink, and then throws it at this guy. Guy hits him straight in the chest and he's like, oh, you know, he's like, what the hell just happened, you know? Everyone kind of stops. This guy just gets up and just throws his cards at this guy and then walks out. You know, he's gone, you know. And the guy standing isn't like mortified going, what happened? What just happened? And I kind of looked at the guy. I looked at this poor guy that's just like there with all these cards around him. I said, dude, pick those goddamn cards up. They're yours, man. Don't you stop. Just because he threw them at you, they're yours. He's just like, huh? Okay. I'm just like, keep going, guys. Don't worry about it, you know. Obviously, the guy was overtired and he just had enough, you know. But yeah, that's my story. What's yours, Melody?
This is more of a scumbled story on me, about me.
All right, that's all right.
I want you to tell me if you think this is scumbag or not.
Okay.
So it's game three of a final of a GPT for GPT Auckland, and it was Dalva versus Monogreen Infect.
And we know which deck you were playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't the blue one.
And I was swinging in for basically lethal. I pumped up one of my Glistener's Elves with, I don't know, a pump spell. I can't even remember now. He goes to Mental Misstep it. I go, okay, look at my hand. Think about it. Sorry, he went to Vapor Snag it. I looked at my hand. I go, okay, look at my hand. Think of it. And then attempt to mental misstep it, right? He goes, no, you said okay. That means that you've confirmed that it's been, you know, that it's resolved. I'm like, no, I was just saying okay as in okay, you're playing the spell. And the judge comes over and then he agrees with me. He's like, no, he hadn't returned it to his hand. He was just looking at it, you know. He was looking at his hand. He was thinking about it, even though he said okay. He was, and he, like I had, and then I won basically. So he didn't even shake my hand. He just storms out, and then he's just like out there going, and like saying that, you know, I had let it resolve and all this stuff, and it was me being scumbaggy. Do you think that was being scumbaggy?
No, that wasn't scumbagging, man.
Yes, I think playing Infect is scumbagging.
No, but I mean, like,
oh, that's not what you wanted?
Apart from the fact that he was playing Infect, that wasn't scumbagging. He was just, did you say the word resolved? Yeah, that's resolved.
No, I just said okay. Oh, actually, I said yep. I said yep after he played it.
Okay, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So every time I see him now and I've played against him, because he wasn't a local, if you don't, I'll just be, he'll be like, he'll bring it up and I'll just be like, yep.
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 Did you go to GP Auckland from that?
Yep. What was real funny? Okay. My magic accomplishments have been, I've top eight a PDQ, I've won a couple of game days, and on that GP, I had three buys, played a total of three games after that, and I only won one. I didn't even make day two of the smallest GP in all of 2013.
I missed that GP.
2012, whenever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 286 people.
Oh, man.
Day two.
Oh, man.
But to be fair, I flew up there, slept in the airport, because there was a big concert on the same weekend in Auckland, and every backpackers was booked out. So I slept in the airport, went to the GP, then slept in the airport and went home.
Oh, man. So we've got to hook up, and next time if you go up to the next New Zealand GP, I'll go there and we'll go and make sure you don't sleep in a airport, man.
Well, we only get one like every 4 years. So
I know. Sad.
So it's because we have so small ones. Like, that GP was smaller than PDQs.
Small tournaments, right? You meant to say small tournaments. Come on now. Jeez.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're only getting them every 4 years and you can only get 300 people, I mean, that's crazy. You'd think every Magic player in the whole place would come.
Yeah. Well, we had about five coming from my LGS. Which was not much, since it normally, like, it's during the RTR pre-release, we over the five flights, so the midnight, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, I think we had 286 entries over the five flights.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm willing to say that, you know, I know that you're a better player than that, because I've seen you on stream on Scotty Max and stuff, so I know you're a better Magic player than that. You just must have had a really bad day.
Oh, it was also because I was playing, like, a green-white aggro deck, because it was just after the new format came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd been busy studying the entire time, because it was in my last year of my degree, so I didn't really have time to, practice the format and figure it out, which was bad on my part, yeah.
Yeah.
But the guy I went with, the dude who won that, is from my LGS. Walker Munro.
Nice.
Yep. And what was really funny is on Patrick Chapin's article about that GP, he called him Walter Munro. So just ripped the shit out of him for the next month by calling him Walter.
That's funny. We got at the GP, we got told that they were going through top eight or something like that, you know, and they have like, you know, it's usually in like a big hall and so forth. And like, I'd scrubbed out. No, that was fine. And then some of the guys that said, hey, do you want a cube? Let's go in cube. And I'm like, yeah, let's go cube. So we asked the judges, hey, can we just go like into the corner, you know, right back in the corner? And they go, yeah, it should be fine. You know, you got to play there. I was like, excellent. So we're playing. So we're playing in it. The GP, top eight stuff, really serious stuff. You know, there's some serious faces and so forth. And all of a sudden, we're playing, and one of the guys, I still remember it, this guy goes and attacks me with like a, I think it was like a, what was it? It's like a, one of those lightning ox, you know those 4-1 hasters? You know those 4-1 hasters thing, and attacking me, and someone put like double strike on it, and you know, it was just crazy. And out of nowhere, you can hear me in the background, they're supposed to be doing like this audio thing, and in the background, you can hear me going, fuck off! No way! Man, you can't do that. It was cracking up laughing, and then all these judges like turn over and look at us, and I'm like, oh, sorry, man, sorry. Oh, so, but that's it. That's what Magic's all about, man. It's just like it's war stories, you know. That's
yeah, you bet. About. So, guys, I think we're gonna move on to, you know, like I said in the sort of the pre-show, I had to find some way to pit you guys against each other. I mean, Australia, New Zealand, you guys got to battle it out for honor and glory, because I actually have no prizes. So,
well, honor and glory is all we need.
Honor and glory is all you need. So I've created the SVU challenge.
It's okay.
It's a bit of a trivia challenge here. It's Magic related, and it's got three sections, five questions for each of you total, and there's going to be points, and then at the end, honor and glory for the winner. You guys prepared for this shit?
Bring it,
man. So it's going to be any questions I ask are going to be standard related. So anything that's standard legal.
Blue and black.
Go!
So the first category is going to be what I've called magic math. All right? So what you're going to
Jesus, really?
What you're going to be doing is you're going to be like doing addition or subtraction based on magic cards and their converted mana cost. So it'd be like if I was, just to give an example, it'd be like lightning bolt plus lightning bolt would equal like two converted mana cost. And so the answer would be two, except if you're really good and you want bonus points, you would answer in the form of a card that costs two.
Oh,
okay.
All right, let's do this.
All right. So, and I better not hear any tickety typing in the background here either.
No.
I know you guys are both computer, you know, guys. So, so it's all about honor and glory. So you're on your honor system here. All right, so we're gonna start with you, Les.
Yeah, well, we Kiwis are all about honor. I don't know about the Australians.
So I only have to keep my eye on Les. Is that it?
Yep.
Oh, screw you guys, man.
So Les. I'm just gonna flip a coin here and see which question you get in category one. So, Dark Betrayal plus Boonsader.
Dark Betrayal.
Oh man, I'm hitting you.
Okay. Dark Betrayal
plus Boonsader, and the people can play along at home. What do you think that works out
to? The
converted mana cost. Of Dark Betrayal plus the converted mana cost of Boonsader.
Can I answer?
That's like two green, one black, and one?
That's up to you, man.
Dark Betrayal. Is that Dark Vanishing? Yeah, should we go with that? I'll go with that.
What, Dark Vanishing?
I don't know, man. What do you got?
Me? Polyphonos.
Polyphonos.
It's four mana.
What?
And
Boonsader plus... Dark Menacing, that's four mana. Four mana card.
That's right. Dark Betrayal plus Boonsader is four converted mana cost, which would equal Polukranos.
Oh, man. You made it. So, okay.
Did you not?
I got you. I'm going, what one. Card can I have that's green and black? And I'm like,
what?
No. Yeah, okay. So, Les, I'm going to give you the second one because Mildy stole the first one. So.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. We're just warming up, man. We're just warming up. So try this one.
That's so funny.
Try this one, Les. Glare of Heresy.
Yep.
Glare of Heresy plus Dissolve.
Plus Dissolve? Oh, man. So that's two blue and one. And Glare of Heresy is one. Is it one and white? And so you want to make something that's...
I want to... I mean, you can add those. You can just give me the total mana cost if you want sort of the 1 point. Or if you want the full 2 points, you find out... You know, you come back with a card that equals the addition of those.
So, four, five.
All right.
We got five.
Do you know any five casting cost standard legal cards?
Oh God, standard legal cards? Oh, I heard typing. Who the hell did typing?
Oh, no, that wasn't typing. That was me just pushing my keyboard down.
Uh-huh.
I have a Z board, and it has a clip-on thing. I just noticed that was up, so I was pushing it down.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, I'll go with that. Go on. Mildy, go on.
What?
Next level us. What is it?
Well,
what's your answer?
You get
the only one that I can think of that, but it's not standard legal, would be Venter, Solverton, whatever it's called, the Planeswalker, because you'll be 3-1 blue.
Right. You get the point. You get the point for the five. So
yeah.
So it's like 2-1 for Mildy now, because he got the full points on the other one. So Mildy, let's try a second question. Like same kind of question. So
also just back to that second question. Would the correct answer be the new blue white god? That would be 3 blue and white.
It would have been.
Yeah, but it's not standard legal yet.
It's not standard legal yet, so you'd have to find something in the current set. All right, Mildy, so let's try this one. It might be a little harder. We'll see. I don't know. So Warrior's Lesson times Anax and Symeed.
So we've got Warrior's Lesson, which is 1 in green. Attacks and Symeed, which is 1 red, one red white. So it's 5 total. And so 5 converted mana cost card that could be red, white, and what was the first card again?
Warrior's Lesson and an Axe and Symeed.
So yeah, so I'm going with 5 mana.
Oh, back.
So it's 1 in green plus an Axe Symeed. It's just 1 red and white, and a 5 mana card is. Does it have to be in those colors?
Doesn't have to be in those. It can be any card.
Okay, well, Jace, Memory of Death. That's 5 mana.
Well, that's a good answer, but 100% wrong.
Is Sin of Silence not... Oh, is Warrior Lesson 1 green?
Warrior's Lesson is only 1 green.
Damn it! Yeah, I was thinking of the other one. The new one that gives it... Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, guys, I dropped out. What was the question?
Okay, it was Warrior's Lesson plus Action of... Action and Sin of the Red, White Legend.
Warrior's Lesson times an Axe and Symeed.
Yeah, and it was 4 mana, not 5 mana. So if I said Jace Architect of Thought, which is what I was going to say, because I fucked it up anyway.
Anax and Symeed is 3, and Warrior's Lesson is 1, yep. So the answer would have been 3.
4. Yeah.
No, Anax and Symeed is... It's times, not plus.
Oh, times?
Yeah, that's true.
It's a 0, man.
Okay, yep. You win.
All right, Les. I got one for you. Calvary Pegasus.
Yes.
Times Fleshmad Steed.
Fleshmad Steed. Oh, that one.
Fleshmad Steed.
Is that black? It's the black one, and then Calvary Pegasus.
On the right track. Calvary times. Pegasus times Fleshmad Steed.
Fleshmad Steed like 2 converted mana cost. Isn't that?
I don't know. You tell us.
I don't know. I'm looking in the corner of my room, and I'm seeing a spider. I'm asking him, dude, is it like that? Is it like 2?
No, he's like, does it cost the same as spider spawning? I don't care.
Yeah. holy shit, it really is one. Oh man, you got me. I don't play that black card. What the hell?
Well. So You took a guess at the casting cost, so times it by a Calvary Pegasus, and what do you get?
4
is the correct answer.
I know, I was like, but if I wanted to play 4, what the hell would I play? Maybe. Oh, if it was 4, maybe I could go Detention Sphere plus Silence. Fuck you guys. Ta-da!
But silence isn't standard legal. Ta-da! It's from the no. It wasn't from this core set. It was from the core set beforehand.
Was it M14?
It is M14. Booyah!
I thought it was M13.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I will totally give that to Les for the extra credit.
There you go.
So now it's 3-2. Australia's in the lead.
No, oh, don't say that, man. But anyway, keep going. Okay.
All right. Okay. So we're changing categories. This will be a little easier because it's like a 50-50 thing. So I'm calling this one Flavor Factor Fiction. So it's flavor text. I'm gonna give you a card. I'm gonna read the flavor text, and you tell me whether it's the right flavor text or not.
All right. I like this.
All right, Mildy. We're gonna start with you this time.
I'm the worst Vorthos ever, but okay.
All right. Master of Waves. Okay, that's the card we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Master of
Waves. No idea what the flavor text is, but okay.
Nobody does, but that's all right. We're going to have a 50-50 chance.
It's got flavor text?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
All right, so the flavor text is, When the sea god Thassa wishes to speak with a mortal, she does not issue a summons or grant a vision requesting a visit. The sea simply brings her guest before her.
I know this.
I want to say false.
False.
False is correct. Les, do you know which card that's from?
Not that one.
Okay. That was so like, you sounded like you knew. I was like, oh, Les is a genius.
No
it's,
way, man.
It's Riptide.
You know, I was just thinking, it's far too many words to.
It's way too much flavor.
That's why I wrote. That's why
Master Waves.
That's why I put it that way. I'm like, somebody will figure this out. There's way too much text for Master of Waves.
Yeah, I was like,
all right,
no
Les,
way, man.
We're throwing one to you, buddy.
All right, Ian.
All right. So we're talking about Agent of Fates.
Okay.
All right, the flavor text is, you are breathing borrowed air.
True.
True is correct.
Bingo!
Yes.
All right, so we're still 4-3. All right, Mildy, back to you. Hunt the Hunter. The text is, a grudge is a tattoo worn on the inside.
I'm just trying to even remember what Hunt the Hunter does. Is that the green fighter green?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can you please repeat the...
A grudge is a tattoo worn on the inside.
Oh, I want to say false, but... True?
Is that your final answer?
Yes!
True is correct.
Yes!
Yeah.
All right, they're tied up. All right, I got one more in this category for you, Les.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, man.
So,
let's go.
Prophet of Krufix.
Oh, my God. I think I traded one of those things. Okay, keep going.
All right. So, Prophet of Krufix. The text is, Time is fluid as a dance, and truth as fleeting.
True.
True is correct.
Oh, in school.
Les moves into the lead again. 5-4. All right. So there's only one question left each. If Les gets his correct, he wins the whole shebang. If Mildy doesn't get his correct, he can't possibly win. So I think we're going to start with Mildy and put the pressure on
him. You got to start with Mildy, right? You got to put him on.
So this one I'm calling art history.
Okay.
You got to name the artist on the card.
Oh!
I know the total of like four artists.
All right. So name the artist of Perforos, God of the Forge.
Oh, dude. It's not Quentin Hoover. How's that?
And it's not the Duckmaster, RK Post.
No, and it's not Kevy.
Can I lock in C, Kevy?
You should go multiple. Oh, yeah, okay, keep going.
I vote that it was a joint artist of Polis Tomoli, Durfington, and Steve Ruffy. Oh,
so you have that, no idea.
No, I have no idea.
We've hit the topic that you know nothing about.
Yeah, well, I told you to say I was a bad Vorthos.
Oh, so Les, do you know what the answer is?
I'll go with no, but maybe not Chris Rann, is it? No, he did all the moxes. Okay.
See, you're the artist. You should know these things.
Oh,
you're out there stealing their art for your proxies. Come on.
Big time. Big time. And I say please too when I take it. So
everyone at home is probably screaming at their iPods.
Everybody at home is going, I don't know who that is either.
The answer is Eric DeChamp.
Oh, sorry, Eric.
I have no idea who that is.
Sorry, Eric. Oh, man.
So
yeah,
I'm going to give one more chance for Mildy to come back and tie it. I'm going to start with Mildy again. So, Mildy, okay. Elspeth's Sun Champion.
Okay, Mildy. Charity. Okay.
Okay.
The charity one, because Roboto felt sorry for you. Just saying.
Sounds like Les knows the answer to this one.
I don't know the correct answer, but I know Robot Large, and I've got a feeling it will be the same artist.
You're the same one. You're the same one. Go.
You are 100% correct. It is.
Yeah, I told you, man.
Oh, yeah.
Play the person instead of playing the game, I guess.
There you go. I'm so transparent. I'm actually just really lazy. Well, that's like the perfect ending. I mean, it's a tie. There is no supremacy. You both are still.
Not an issue for you, man. It's all the same.
No. Give Liz his question, and then if he doesn't get it, then it gives me a chance to be able to get it right.
No, I only had two, and I gave them both to you to try and make sure you could tie it up. And there you go. Because that's what the SVU does. We look after ourselves, after our people.
Well, speaking of, it's like with the heavy midi hoodie. The amount of with him going, oh shit, I don't think I'm going to be able to get it in time. And then there's heaps of people going, yeah, we can cover you. Just we'll add $10 on ours. And
exactly.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about that too before we go. Is I wanted to make sure that in case anybody listens to us who doesn't listen to Heavy Meta, which I can't imagine, but nevertheless, you should definitely check out their last podcast because they have on their show notes the information for ordering their hoodies, and there's only a 2-week period to order them. And they, as far as I'm concerned, those guys are geniuses because whoever is making the hoodies even has the fat guy sizes. All the way up to 6X, which should handle anybody in the SVU from tall, you know, from big guys to small guys.
Only problem though is apparently he doesn't have midget sizes for the heavy meta midget.
Well, they may have to custom make something, but I was pretty impressed because oftentimes, you know, they'll use somebody who only makes like a 2X, and then it's really only a large because it was made in China and. Awesome. So everybody that's interested in that should definitely get on board right away. And like Mildy was saying, I was really impressed when like Mike Marsala, you know, really wants one really badly. And obviously he was having a little trouble coming up with the scratch right away and offered to pay back anybody that would sort of sponsor the hoodie. And right away, you know, there's Mildy and there's a couple other guys.
I think a lot of people were like ready to go, hey, we'll just add $10, you know?
Yeah, and then obviously Slick had to come along and ruin it for everyone.
Slick, you glory hunting bastard. Yeah. That's what you are. You just took it all, didn't you?
I thought I'd put it on the cast. We'll raise some funds for this guy. It'll be all good. And then Slick's like, yeah, man, I'll just go totally. I got you, bro.
Yeah. It's all good because now Kraken also spoke up saying that he might not be able to do it as well. So it's like, fine, I'll give that 10 to you instead then, Kraken.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
We'll get everyone kitted out, you know?
Yeah. Everyone that needs one should get one. And, big props to Slick for stepping in there and taking care of Mike. That's pretty awesome. I like Slick Jagger a lot.
The mighty Slick Jagger.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed to...
On his stream, he could set it so that you could lower the quality because my internet is shit and I can't watch it his stream because it keeps cutting in and out because it's streaming too high.
Well, he's just such a high-quality guy. Yeah. There's no low quality for Slick.
Exactly.
It was so good watching his stream, and you could see him after every couple of beers. He was getting worse and worse and worse, and he was like subbing out. He was getting someone else in. To play the game because he couldn't see the cards. he's like, you can see him looking at the screen going, what is that? Sub. okay. And he started clicking away. Oh, it's so funny. So he is awesome in my books, man.
Oh,
you up, man.
I don't have I'm not ashamed at all to admit I have a total broner for that guy. I mean, he's just awesome. And, you know, we'll get him back on the cast one of these days for sure because he was a great guest.
Oh man, it was so good. And I got to admit, I really enjoy listening to the SVU cast. Just some of the topics that have been brought up here, Michael, is amazing. It's like, I think a lot of topics that I think a lot of other podcasts could not handle, you know? It's like they have commitments and they need to, you know, they might be a little bit afraid to talk about depression, or they might be, you know, all those things.
It's not something that I expected when we started. We're really sort of just targeting the stories of the people, right? And getting to know people like you guys and a little better than we normally do. But it sort of came up and we started talking about these, doing this show and, you know, like depression and doing the religion one. And I'm just like, wow, really? So soon? Like, we're barely warming up here and already we're into these heavy duty topics, but you know what? We got no reputation to ruin. So what the fuck? We'll just do it. You know, I don't have any sponsors. I don't owe anybody anything. So we'll get all that. You know, if it goes to shit and falls apart, well then whatever. It's the experiment failed and we'll move on. But it turned out really good. I was really happy. We had some good conversations and a lot of people really appreciated, you know, the way it was handled. And I think it was awesome, and I look forward to doing more if people have some some topics they want to tackle, and we can find some expertise in that area to talk about it with. Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh yeah, that's and even like having Mike Marsala on there, you know, talking about his trials and tribulations and stuff. Oh man, it was just so good to listen to, you know, because he's like, you know, he's one of the boys, you know, and just hearing about just people that are in the SVU. And how close we are and how we help each other out, you know, in this big world of magic, you know, there's this little pocket of people, you know, and we call ourselves SVU and we look out for each other. And that's what I really like.
Well, and that's really the whole point of doing this podcast, really, as I've said before, is just so that we get to know each other a little better. I mean, we don't have that face-to-face interaction. I can't sit down with you guys, you know, at the bar and get to know you. So that's kind of what this is. You know, all about is more that atmosphere where we just sit around and bullshit and have some fun, learn a few things about each other and then feel closer as a community, right? Because then we, you know, when you are communicating with somebody on Twitter or, you know, on email or whatever, it's not just that faceless entity.
Yeah. I also think that the SVU has grown in itself to be almost an entity of itself. Because it's just the heavy meta SVU now. It's the SVU of a group of podcasts.
Yeah.
They include like Brainstorm, The Brewery, some 18 people who actually like the better podcast on Mount of the Pride.
Well, I really that aspect of it, that it really has become its own thing. And I mean, not everybody in the sort of SVU community is really active in creating stuff, but enough of us are that there's all these, you know, there's the Proxy Factory and there's multiple podcasts and there's blogs and there's all this content that we're all out there doing, and we kind of can sort of put a little header on it that we're all part of this community, and so we're all consuming each other's media, and you know, even by doing it that way, by, you know, going to Rico's blog and going to Slick's new stream, and you know, we're always learning more about each other as we go and we're interacting. And I mean, I don't know where this is headed. I don't know where the SVU will ultimately go. I think we're
due world domination.
Yeah, you know, I really look forward to the next opportunity to get more of us all in one place. I think you know, sort of like the GP Vegas thing. I think we're just waiting for that perfect storm where we can all get in one place, and then it's going to be an even greater debacle.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's all those things that we need to, you know, make sure that it's in the state somewhere because Kevy can't get out. but it's got to be close to Canada so that Mike can actually travel down and not pay a fortune. What else do we need? What are the other things that we need?
I'm really keeping my eye on whether they do a GP Vegas in 2015. Because, you know, Vegas is a great place to do something like that, in that almost everywhere you go, there's cheap flights to Vegas, right? I mean, that's one of those places where you can just get to cheaper than normal. So I think maybe in 2015, if they do another GP Vegas, and, well, you know, we'll have to start planning around that one when it gets announced.
Modern Masters too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because if you work it out, the first Modern Masters was the first 7 years of Modern. So in 2016 would be the second 7 years of Modern.
Right.
So, you know, if they work it, like, Monomassum's out that way, then, you know.
That's what I'm looking forward to. I hope the timing works out. I hope it all comes together because I can foresee that. I mean, I know they're doing the GP Montreal thing and the drunk train, and that's pretty cool. It's going to be awesome. I wish I was going to that. Unfortunately, it's over $1,000 just for me to get there, so. It's, but Vegas is a place that even as remote as I am, and even you guys over in the future can, you know, get relatively affordable flights to go there, right?
Yeah, because we're in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the airfare going from Australia, New Zealand to the States. It's coming from, you know, from the future back. That's the tough part.
Can you guys give me like some lotto numbers from the future and then I can play them today? And is that how that works?
Well, if you do, if we give you the lotto numbers, you'd only win like New Zealand dollars, which isn't that much. So.
Oh.
Do they pay you?
Excuse me, the New Zealand dollar, I think at the moment it's 91 cents to the US dollar.
Do they even have dollars? Yeah. I thought they just traded cheap. Is that how that works?
No, we're not that Stewart Island.
I was going to say, that's Tasmania. It's like clams and sheep droppings and stuff. I don't know.
All right, boys. Well, I think we're gonna shut her down here pretty quick because we want to leave some time at the end of the cast. And
I've got a question for you, Mike.
Oh, yeah. We'll get there in a second. We'll get there in a second. I got some last comments for you guys, and if there's any questions, I just want to remind everyone to stick around at the end of the cast because we're going to have another one of these dead reckoning stories of Jack Lacroix.
That's cool.
And he's got a special one. It's been in the can for a little while, and our audio guy has juiced it up with a little special treatment there. I think you guys are going to like it.
Nice.
So stick around at the end when the cast ends, and we'll go into Jack Lacroix or Lacroix. As those American folk like to call it.
How does he like? What is he? How does he say it?
LaCroix.
LaCroix.
Okay. Yeah.
It just sounds almost like pompous. It's like, hi, I'm LaCroix.
LaCroix, and I have a dick.
Well, if it's like if he's like, yo, hey, what's up, my bros? I'm Jack LaCroix. How's it going?
Yeah, mate.
Might.
So, Mildy, before we go, any last thoughts or comments? You had a question or something you wanted to hit me with?
Okay. So, the new Planeswalker in the new set, Born of the Gods.
Kiora.
What? Yeah. Okay. And do you
remember? I know where you're going.
Do you remember when it was released in Duels of the Planeswalker? Do you remember its full name?
In Duels of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even play the second one. I only played the first one.
Okay, so it was Kiora Atua. What do you think that means in Maori?
Oh. It actually means something?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a Maori word. Well, it's two Maori words.
It's two Maori words, yep.
Hmm.
So whoever is on WhatsApp that named that is obviously from New Zealand. Shout out to you.
They actually changed it. They changed the last name. That's what Kyoto Crashing Waves.
I know, but they should have stuck it up.
They found that second name was offensive.
So tell me it's something perverted.
No.
It's got to be something good.
Okay. Hey, Liz. Kyoto.
Yep. Kyoto.
Kyoto, cuz.
Kyoto, great to be here.
What do you think it means?
Jeez, I don't know.
Kyoto, Mike.
It's hello.
Hello.
Hello in Maori. Kia ora.
That's what it means?
Yep.
So her name was Kiora Hello.
No, Kia ora means hello.
Oh, Kia ora means hello. Well, what does the second part mean then?
It's God.
Oh.
It was hello, God.
Hello, God.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why they changed it, because...
It's a God set.
Yeah.
Why did they change it?
I guess because they didn't want planeswalkers to be gods.
Or they just didn't. They didn't want a whole community of players like slaughtering our language.
Yeah, maybe there's that. Interesting. Yeah, I'd be interested to know why they changed it. I don't know.
There's a blog or something I read somewhere about why they changed it because it was offensive. But that's what I think. I don't see how it's offensive.
Well, for one thing, only a very small portion of the world would even know what it meant or that it meant anything.
Mm. But
yeah, I don't know.
I thought that was going to be on one of your quizzes, and then no.
Oh.
So I thought I would.
No, it's not going to make that too easy on you. Give you something in your own language.
Shout out to Angelo too. Him and I have been talking about making a band control, or I like to call it Kraken control list for the upcoming standard season. So shout out to him.
Nice. Kraken control. I like it.
Yeah, so that's going to be the new hotness that I'm going to be rocking. And a lot of the guys at my local LGS, they're like, oh, we should do this too. No way, man. Dibs, I got that. That's me. Go play with your mono black controller and mono blue thing, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you think I'm a scumbag / spiky player, what decks do you think I play in Modern?
Modern. What kind of? Well, I don't know. Are you playing Infect?
Nope.
No, I bet he's playing like a. I bet you're playing a pod deck, right?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
A spiky, douchey player. What would they be playing in Modern?
White Weenie? No?
Nope.
Oh, man. I don't know. Are you a Jund player?
Nope.
Oh, well, we'd be guessing all day long.
See, I've broken your stereotype. You're thinking I play all the scumbag decks. No, I play the Holt Genesis Nyx deck. You know, with Genesis Wave Nythos.
Oh, is that the one that Trevor Holness has been playing?
Yeah, Trevor Holness, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
Trevor.
I play a deck that I've played against Marshall, Matty, and last night, T-Moles, with Blue-Black Tesserator, which is basically Blue-Black Control.
Goats!
Yep.
Freaking goats. Oh!
In our last game, because I had just complete control over the game, I was about to beat him, he goes to Abrupt Decay, one of my goats, I redirect it to Spellskite, and then I eat the Spellskite with a Trading Post. I'm like, no, you leave my goats alone.
That's awesome. Jeez,
when I think of goats, man, I'm going to be thinking of you.
Yes, now you're no longer the sheep fucker. Now you're the goat fucker.
Hey, leave the goats alone.
Actually, I won't be even leaving the goats alone because at the local market here, they have goat burgers and goat pies. Sorry, so I'm going to have a goat pie and I'm going to be thinking of you. Actually, I'll take a photo of it and then I'll send it to you, Milly.
Totally,
I just ate one of your cousins. Yeah,
totally. Well, I'll have to try to remember to ask Marcel about that when we have on the show because we're going to have him on pretty soon here. We're going to talk food. We're going to talk food with Marcel.
Oh, and Kevy as well, yeah?
And Kevy's on tomorrow night. We're doing a double recording weekend just to fit Kevy's schedule and the rest of ours. So they won't come out like all at the same time, but his will be on released after yours. And
nice.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to getting Kevy on here and getting in behind the Kevy story.
Behind the music.
Yeah, exactly.
So does he say his outro on the SBU?
I don't know. No. I don't know. We'll have to see where it goes. We're trying to see where it takes us. You never know with Kevy.
Depending on how long you're casting for and how long he's drinking for, he'll probably think he is on heavy meta and anyway that way.
If I call him Mike Maddie.
I'm just hoping to wrangle him into a podcast that's less than 3 hours.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. I may actually have to mute him at some point and just end the cast.
Yeah, and just be like in the cast and just be like, oh, okay, yep. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. See how long it takes to notice.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you talking to me. I know it's a bit of a pain with the time zone differences and stuff, and you had to get up, early or set aside part of your midday. So I really appreciate it. It's been awesome talking with you guys.
I think it was more harder for you than it was for us.
Yeah, probably.
You guys, okay. You're the one that kind of sorted it all out for us, so thank you very much.
Well, I just want to remind everyone to make sure you leave us some comments on mannerdeprived.com and, you know, show KYT some love. He's been hosting these podcasts. He took a flyer on this cast, and we want to make sure we leave some comments so we can appreciate just how popular we really are and doesn't...
I'm still amused that the SVU cast gets more comments than almost any other cast on Mana Deprived.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, we don't like to brag, but yeah, if you guys could leave some extra comments, that'd be awesome. Then we have lots of bragging rights. Okay, well, that's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, and be sure to catch us for the Kevy episode next time. And as usual, remember, if you're listening to this, you are the SVU.
Yay!
God of nations at thy feet, in the bonds of love we meet. Hear our voices, we entreat. God, defend our free land. That Pacific triple star, from the strifes of strife and war, make her praises hear afar. God defend New Zealand.
Well, there you go. If that's not the best intro to Jack's story, I don't know what is.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego!
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to listen to a little featurette called Dead Static. Dead Static is just a nice audio representation of the various fictional works that I come across and that I myself create. Good evening, listeners, and welcome to another thrilling episode of Dead Static. I am, as always, your magnanimous host with the most, Jack Antonio Sabato de la Hoya King Kong Bundy LaCroix. And this week, listeners, I've something a bit more chilling to read to you. But I've a question first. Listeners, where does the best fiction come from? Is it out of the head? Is it out of the heart? Is it out of the delusions and dreams of every drunkard and addict with a pen? No. It's from none of these things, though they do tend to claim sourcage. Rather, the best fiction comes from life, because real life truly is stranger than fiction in almost every occurrence, isn't it? Listeners, it's that very fact that brings me to tell you this tale this week, because it's one from my own personal life. See, shortly before I got engaged and reacquainted with my wife, whom I've known for several years, there was a brief interlude where, as a lonely young man, I was seeking any company from any corner of the earth that I could find. Quite often of the female variety, but you can't blame a fellow for trying to consult with spirits and other denizens, can you? All the same, I met a young girl who unfortunately was incarcerated, and we spent many, many years together writing letters back and forth, getting to know one another the best that we could. She was quite a troubled lady, but she was also quite sweet and kind, and after a point I did start to grow affection for her. But there came a point, again, when my wife stepped back into my life and I had to cease contact with this young lady. And so I bid my final farewell to her, and in return, I finally got to find out why this young lady was incarcerated. It was just something I had never bothered to ask, something that seemed too personal, too risky, to ask somebody I considered a friend and perhaps more. This week, folks, I'm going to bring you Red's completely unadulterated final letter to me. Now, I should stress before I begin that Red's story is not for the squeamish, it's certainly not for the faint of heart, and quite honestly, a good majority of you should probably turn your dials now. This is your only warning. Are you still there? Of course you are. Because, like many people who do fall into those categories who are still listening right now. Your curiosity got the better of you, didn't it? You're wanting to know if Red Story really is that bad, if it is something that perhaps could be spun as fiction. But I assure you, dear listeners, it's nothing but reality. So, without further ado, allow me to bring you Red this week on Dead Static. He's standing in the door, foot over the threshold. One of his hands is in his pocket, balled into a fist. The other strokes his beard, gray eyes searching me. First my face, then my neck, my shoulders. His eyes wander lower, but snap back to my own. "So you're sure you've not heard anything, then?" I smirk, giving him a giggle. "Sheriff, if I had, you'd know. Given your position, you'd know." He sighs, putting one hand in his right coat pocket. He pulls his foot back, boots crunching on gravel. He shoots me a smile, but then he looks away.
"Well, I know that, but I was just hoping."
"Hoping for what, Sheriff?" He kicks the gravel, looking back at the cruiser. He takes a few steps towards it before turning back to me. He shrugs his shoulders and says, "I was hoping this would be one of the easy ones, Red." I laugh, moving my hand to the door. I nod politely and say, "Well, Sheriff, if this was one of the easy ones, we'd not need you now, would we?" He nods his head, pulling a hand out of his coat, and he opens the top of a pack of Marlboro Lights.
"Yeah, I guess not. You'd tell me if you hear anything, though, right?"
he says, pulling out a lighter. "Of course, Sheriff. Don't I always?"
"Yeah, Red. Yeah, you do. Tell your grandma I said hello, all right?"
"Yes, Mr. Policeman." The sheriff lights a cigarette, looking at me. He takes a long drag off of it, scanning me. Scanning the house, the windows, the storm shelter door. Then he nods, he turns, and he walks back to his car. The cruiser roars to life, and down the driveway he goes, shoveling gravel in all directions. And as he takes a turn, leaving my sight, all I can do is laugh. And then I hear the thump upstairs. As the door swayed out, the first thing I noticed was a soot-black shoe, then the razor crease along a black pant leg, which led to a thin waist. Black shirt, mocha grin, wide green emerald eyes, just as described, terrifying and beautiful. I heard him approach the counter, watching his shadow along the wall, long and thin and dark, just like the rest. A voice said, "Are you Red?" I was covered in flour and sweat. I just bent to pick up a bread pan, letting out a grunt. My back was turned. When I turned to face him, I dropped the pan. It clattered onto the floor, and I felt my face grow hot. I'd heard of Lobo long before he came into the bakery. He lived up to the rumors, and exceeded them, along with every sordid whisper I'd heard from the ladies who came in. Here he was, at last, and all I could do was muster a whispered, "Yes?" He eyed the pan, a smirk cutting across his face. White teeth glistened behind full red lips. I thought about the grimy tile around my ovens. I'd tried for years to get them as clean, as white, as pure as that. But they never were. Between the tiles, there was always a thin veneer of shit, dirt, and grime. He said, "Well, Red, I've heard you make an amazing apple pie. Is that true?" "It is Red, right? That's not some sort of nickname?" My face was on fire. I wiped my hands upon my apron, forcing a smile. "No, that's my name. My real name. What can I do for you, Mr. Lobo?" "Call me Lobo." "And like I said, Red, I've heard all about this apple pie you make. Do you perchance have any on hand?" I nodded, pointing towards the glass case, trying to ignore the churning in my stomach. I made some this morning." "You're quite fortunate. It tends to go rather quick. How big a piece do you want?"
He'd not broken his gaze this entire time, and still leaned so casually upon the counter. I walked over to the case, and watched as his eyes fluttered. "Oh, I'll handle anything you throw at me. Surprise me." "All right, then, for here or to go?" He chuckled and said, "I think that window looks nice and warm. I think I'll have it right over there." I pulled a knife from a nearby drawer and cut out a piece, huge and thick. I grabbed a paper plate and dropped it on top, the plate bending beneath the weight. I walked back to the cash register, pushing the pie towards him. "Anything else, Mr. Lobo?" "Just Lobo, Rudd. Only housewives say Mr." "And maybe. Let's see how this first taste goes, shall we?" I smiled, doing my best to remain calm. I rang him up. He took the pie and sat down at the window, glancing over with every bite. I cried afterwards. I cried, curled into a ball in the sweat and the blood. There wasn't much of either, but it was enough. Enough to sink into the tile and take root there. But all I could think about was his smile, pure white, flashing teeth from a full red grin. I'd heard about that smile and what it'd done to the other girls. They'd come in here to cry and bawl and eat pie and bitch. Then their friends would console them. They'd pat them on the shoulders, even, and they'd say, "Oh, it's okay. He's just a jerk. He'll get it one day. You know he will." Tears streamed down my cheeks until they just didn't come anymore. Soon the sobs stopped, too, and as I looked up, naked and alone between a dough rack and hundreds of ingredients, I noticed how silent that shop was, how quiet it all seemed without the oven running or any of the customers scuffling around or demanding things of me. But it was okay, because he's a jerk, and he'll get it one day, right? Oh, I just know he will. I reached for my skirt, pulling it over my waist. I grabbed my shirt, tugging it down, not bothering to tuck it in. Then I hugged my knees and tried not to cry again. Then I grabbed a rag and tile cleaner, and I scrubbed until my knuckles turned white. The floor looked absolutely spotless where I'd lain, where we'd lain, except for the grout in a single spot. It had taken on the deep, rich color of rust. I turned the close sign over at 3 o'clock, not 5 or even 4, which was uncommon but did happen. 3 o'clock. 2 hours sooner than normal. No one was walking up to the door when I did. I'd thank God for that, but didn't. My lips were too cracked, my jaw was too sore to make any words. With the sign turned over, I dropped the blinds. I mopped one of the two tables. Not his, though. Then I counted the money in the register and put it in the safe. As I folded it in half, I almost pressed it into my jeans pocket. But no amount of money would take me where I wanted to go. So I just put it in the safe instead. I went out the front door, turning and locking it as I left. I looked around outside, across the street, up the pavement, in every corner in shadow. The wind howled and the street was empty. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, people were still at work, school buses hadn't ran, and nobody was out unless they had a reason to be, like getting a piece of pie. I put my hands inside of my coat, looked straight ahead, and walked towards the bus stop. The entire way, with every swing of my leg, a warmth built within me, and as it grew, I clenched my hands into fists. My hands were still balled tight as I flipped through the keys trying to get into my house. I stopped for a moment, willing them to unfold, but they didn't listen. I gritted my teeth and found the front door key. I jammed it into the lock and went inside. Then I turned, locked the door, set the bolt, and then set the chain for the first time in years. I slid against the door, throwing my purse into the living room. My ass was still sore from being slammed onto the tile, so I stood at an angle, my back holding the door in place. I looked down at my hands and felt a sharp pang of pain. I unfolded them at last. My nails had pierced into my palm. I pressed my hands onto my skirt, but the stinging persisted. Small red smears spread from my palms. He didn't know where I live. He couldn't. But as I stood there, looking at the wood grain of my floor, I kept turning that thought over and over in my head. My back began to stiffen, and I rose, walking towards the flight of stairs that lead to my bedroom. I topped them, turning towards my open bedroom door. I crossed the room, stepping over the crumpled, discarded laundry, and fell atop the mattress. And for the third time that evening, I tried not to cry. I pulled the comforter back, crawling inside, warmth enveloping my toes, my legs, and my aching sex. I rolled onto my stomach, hiding my head under a pillow, willing the day away. The sun set, and I finally got my wish. I reached towards my nightstand for the phone. My palm touched bare wood, sharp stings replaced with a dull line of pain. The ringing was down the hall, down the stairs, in the living room, where I'd left my bag the night before. I groaned, pulled back the comforter, and stood up. I was no less sore, but I was awake. I was alive. I stole a glance at the clock on the far wall near my door. It was also late. The bakery opened at 6 a.m. I had to be there by 4 a.m. to begin. The small hand and the big hand pointed towards 9 a.m. The business crowd would have just started. The business crowd, with their nice suits and their ties, and their cell phones pressed to their ears, with full wallets and empty stomachs. I bolted down the stairs, and as I reached the living room, I picked up my bag. I opened it, digging through for my phone. It was at the very bottom. And as I pulled it up, I noticed it wasn't my alarm going off. I'd slept through it already. The caller ID said Lakeview Police Department. I hit answer and said, "Hello?" My voice cracking with sleep. "Hello to you too, sunshine." "Morning, Sheriff." "Sheriff Bartholomew Bartleby. Graham's friend, my fill-in grandfather." It was good to hear his voice, but not right now. Not right out of bed. "You feeling okay, Red? I noticed the bakery weren't open this morning." Graham had never told me where Sheriff Bart had come from. His accent was a mix of southern twang and deep European living, of desperate accommodation. But having heard it my entire life, I'd grown accustomed to it. I'm not feeling well, Bart. I slept in late, that's all." There was a deep inhale on the other line. He said, "Hey, missy, 'twhat I figured. Is there anything I can do for you?" "No, Bart, I'll be fine. I'm a big girl now." He let out a small laugh and said, "Okay, then. You just know how I am. Stay home today. Get to feeling better, ja?" "I will, Bart, but I'm gonna go get some breakfast now, okay?" "All right, missy. See you around later." "See you, Bart." I hit end call, looking down at the phone. 9:15 a.m. I'd already lost the business crowd. The lunch crowd varied, and on a Friday, the store could be packed or emptied. Outside of a few geriatrics, like Bart, the dinner crowd was next to non-existent. I dropped my phone into my bag, picked up my purse, and walked into the kitchen. I grabbed a box of off-brand cornflakes and put them on the table. I grabbed the milk out of my barren fridge and grabbed a bowl from the cupboard. I pulled out a drawer, grabbing whatever spoon looked the cleanest. As I poured the flakes into the bowl and the milk, I realized I'd never really read the back of this box of cereal. Never paid it any detail, just not really. Not the nutrition label, not the name, not anything. I remembered the cost is somewhere around $3. But I'd never paid any mind to it beyond that. Not at all. Yesterday had been just like that. I'd watched his shadow on the wall, but not after he'd finished his pie, coming around the counter into the kitchen. Said he was looking for a trash can. He smiled then. I turned and pointed towards the storeroom. It was only now I realized I had a trash can out front, just for the customers to use, something everyone used every day. Another detail I'd taken for granted. Something I was so used to being there, I'd completely forgotten about it. He'd either missed it, or had planned to come around that counter to start with. I left the bowl half finished on the table. I walked back up the stairs, and I crawled into bed. The TV flickered in the dark of my living room. The narrator spoke with a thick accent, saying, "The male wolf's dominance is determined by his virility and raw power." I sat on my couch, curled in a blanket. The TV was a distant hum. It droned on, drowning out all the other noises in the house. I stared at the screen, watching as a black, filthy, yellow-eyed mongrel appeared. The alpha male, regardless of genus or pack size, is determined both by progeny and their capacity to defend their relevant position within pack hierarchy. The camera cut to a shot of several wolves trotting along, all save one staying very close together, one that had broken from the pack with its nose to the ground. The others followed. If the pack leader is challenged, violence is the only acceptable solution. The camera cuts to two wolves circling each other, their mouths open, slobbering and snarling. The hackles in the back of their necks are raised as they lunge, teeth snapping at each other's throats. Bright and white, gleaming from red-stained maws. "Should the pack leader fall," says the narrator, "it's often in the worst way, public humiliation." The wolves tumble on the grass, snarling and yipping at each other. The challenger snaps at the other's ears, his snout in his throat. Red lines appear, seeping onto black fur. The camera cuts again to the wolf, the loner from before, whimpering, hobbling away with its tail tucked between its legs. "The object of the duel is not simply to gain position," says the narrator as the camera cuts back to the challenger, now leading the pack, "but to ensure that the former alpha leader is disabled, both physically and through the pack's perception of his strengths. When mating season comes, there's a significant chance he'll be unable to find a mate." I sat up then, reaching for the remote. I turned the volume up as far as it would go. "In some cases, disabled alphas will leave the pack fending in the wilds alone. Often they seek other packs who are sometimes less than receptive." The camera cuts to the old alpha, scarred with his head low, joining a group of wolves in a kill. And I snap at him, chasing him away from him. "They smell wounds upon him. They smell failure and weakness, something intolerable in any pack. The former alpha has few choices. With no mates and no packs, some simply fade into the woods, finding a den for their pending death." The camera zooms back in on the alpha, staying within a small cave. Its eyes are closed, and its breathing is slowed. Yet, as is sometimes the case, a more harmful solution presents itself. The camera cuts back to a pack of wolves bounding over a hill, their leader scarred and battered, the newest alpha. They crest the hill, watching the sleeping wolf from afar. The camera cuts to the pack surrounding him, snarling, hackles raised. Their former leader starts to snarl back, but its head is still so low, its stale, its tail still tucked. It tries to escape, but is met with snapping jaws at every turn. The narrator breaks in just as the new alpha's jaws descend, clamping upon its neck as it lets loose one final howl. "Strength and virility, these are what make an alpha leader. And without them, they're just prey." The camera zooms out and the narrator says, "I'm Rob Paulson and this has been Into the Wild. Tune in next week when we..." The TV flickers as I hit the power button on my remote. I felt my fingers curling, gripping the blanket around me. As my fingers curled into fists yet again, I felt the heat in my chest churn over and over. Not within my stomach or my thighs, but within the center of my chest. It burned like hot coals, like fire and lava. A thought occurred to me then, one as dark as ash, dark as hell, but just as tempting and just as sweet as a big, thick piece of apple pie. I sat there a long while before glancing up at the clock. I settled into the couch, but I didn't sleep. 3 a.m. came, and I rose, walking up the stairs. I got dressed, and I came back down, going into the kitchen. I opened my silverware drawer, reaching in the back. My fingers wrapped around a familiar handle, one I had hefted countless times, both here and with my grandmother when she first taught me to cook, when she'd first taught me how to cut, press, and jab, until something was perfect, until all was cut just the way I wanted it. I pulled it out of the drawer, gripping the handle tight as I placed it into my purse. I curled the top over, and I walked towards my front door. The thumping continued even as I pounded my feet up the stairs. Even as I turned the doorknob to my guest room, it persisted, pounding, quick, but soft, feeble, futile. I pushed the door open and flicked on the light switch. He wasn't intimidating in the end, without those black clothes, a shower, and a smile. But as he laid there, flailing on those stubs that used to be his limbs, I almost pitied him. But when he looked up at me, sweat breaking across his face, he uttered the only word he knew from a toothless jaw. Kill. I sighed, walking across the room and giving him a swift kick in the ribs. The impact was so hard he turned over on his back, his nubs flailing at their seared, pus-leaking ends. He howled, crying out in pain as he looked up at me, and said, "Gonna kill you, fucking bitch!" I smirked, leaning over as I cupped my hand over his ear. "What's that, Mr. Lobo? You sound rather funny." Garbled words escaped his throat. I reached out and poked the burned end of his thighs hard. My finger sunk into his flesh, and he let out a piercing wail. And as I pulled my finger back, slick with blood, he started crying. "Oh, come now, Mr. Lobo. Today is a very special day. Would you like to know why?" I said, standing up, putting my hands on my hips. He looked up, and in his eyes I saw his desperation, his lack of strength, his need to fade from the moment, to black out just as he had when I slammed a pot over his head in the bakery. But I saw his fear as well, the fear he'd felt every moment of every day since he'd woke up in the storm cellar strapped to a chair. The best predators can hunt the same grounds with impunity, but Lobo had just pretended to be one. He squirmed and he begged, wetting himself as Graham's knife sunk into his legs into sinew and bone, cutting through all with ease. I gave him another kick, one so hard it sent him flying half a foot. I backed up to the door, my hand gripping the handle. I turned the lock, opening the door and exiting, but I turned back and shot him a smile. "Today is a very special day, because we're going to go see all of our friends. Isn't that nice, Mr. Lobo?" He laid there on the carpet, sobbing as I shut the door. It was a low, rasping sound, like a beast lowing, ready for the slaughter. It was the kind of day people pray for. The sun was overhead, but wasn't beating down. The temperature was just warm enough for shorts, but not for sweat. Cardinals and blue jays were flitting tree to tree. Several families were out, with wives leading leash dogs, while husbands wrangled children. Teenagers giggled beneath trees, hands clasped. I stood in the center of town, my car backed up near the water fountain that divided the streets and traffic. I opened my trunk, reaching within and grasping a plastic tub. I pulled it out and placed it near my tire. A low groan escaped from my trunk, but no one noticed. They were all too busy with each other, with their pets and their lives, too busy to pay mind or care. I bent and reached inside again. I clasped his leather belt in the neck of his shirt. He started wailing them, limbs wiggling and writhing as I hauled him out, and dropped him onto the ground unceremoniously. He landed with a wet, meaty smack against the pavement, and gave out a cry of pain. I heard someone gasp then, another say, "What the hell is that?" I bent and picked up the plastic tub, standing and turning to Lobo, holding it above him. He was already trying to escape, his nubby limbs just carrying him mere inches. Someone fucking help me!" he screamed, raising his ragged body off the pavement. But no one came. I saw someone pull out their phone, staring straight ahead. Bart would be here soon in his old, battered cruiser. I pulled the lid off the container, balancing it on one knee. I tossed the lid aside and stepped forward, the shadow of the plastic bin stretching over his body. Then I turned it over, dumping the contents on him. His arms fell, fleshy logs that smacked him in the face. His hands looked withered and gray, the fingernails peeling in black where I'd severed them. His legs landed near his chopped, battered knees, useless and bent askew. I almost laughed, but gagged on the smell of old blood, sticky and putrid, pouring from the container. People finally started screaming then, with their dogs barking and their children clutching to their legs. They were panicked and confused, but they didn't have clarity. No clarity as to what Lobo really was. Not yet. I heard sirens start over the next hill. Bart was coming, and he was bringing the full force with him. I reached into my pocket, pulling out a Ziploc bag. The blood had smeared inside, but two round lumps lay nestled near the bottom. I opened the bag up, reached inside, and pulled them out, blood slick upon my hand. Lobo cried out, like a cornered animal. Then he tried to scramble under his viscera and decayed limbs. Couldn't help but think of the wounded Alpha then. I bent over, gripping the shreds of his hair as I forced his jaws open, shoving his useless testicles into his mouth. I leaned in, even as I heard the sirens right behind me, even as I heard a car door open and Bart's familiar accent screeching for everyone to get back. I leaned in and said something Lobo had said to me that day in the bakery. "Come on now, good girl, swallow." A hand gripped my hair, hauling me off of him. I screamed as I felt prongs enter my back, my bowels emptying as electricity shot through my entire body. The world began to fade, and as I fell, face meeting the pavement, I did so laughing. Bart sits on the other side of the glass, phone clasped tight in his hands. His knuckles are white and his face is gray and worn. The bags under his eyes get bigger every time I see him. He's getting worse, but his questions are always the same, just like my answers. "You look bad, Bart," I say, giving him a slight smile. "Have you thought about retiring yet?" "Nah, Red, I can't do that yet," he says, settling into his chair. He's staring at me, his eyes locked onto mine, still searching. But I won't give him what he wants.
"Well, why not, Bart?"
"Red, you know why, yeah?"
"Oh, is it because the last one wasn't one of the easy ones, Bart?"
His face winces when I say that, pulling his fingers up to his hands, to his face, rubbing his temples, then his eyes, letting out a deep sigh before he looks back at me. We sit there in silence before he finally says, "Your gram is doing just fine, ja. She misses you, missy."
"I know, Bart. I miss you guys too, okay?"
He checks his watch, biting his lip as he looks back up at me. He almost says something then, mouth agape, before he says, "I'll come to see you again. Real soon, yeah, Red?" I nod and say, "I know you will, Bart. You always do. Give my love to Graham for me." We nestled the phones back on their hooks, turning from our chairs and leave. I go with the guard, Bart towards the exit, reaching for the door. He goose-steps the entire way, getting out quick before I see him cry. He thinks I'm alone in here, or that I'm crazy, and the little red he knew is so far gone, so long behind me. But I'm not. I get letters every week, some from morbid admirers, but many of them from fond women. Some who knew Lobo, some who knew someone like him. And in those letters, they always tell me how scared these men made them. How they always felt like they were stalking around every corner with their shadows so long, so thin. They'd have these odd smiles, too, all white and pure, flashing behind red lips. They'd be charming and beautiful, but in the end, they were always absolutely terrifying. These women, they tell me I've given them strength, that I've inspired them, and they've told all their friends about me, and about Lobo, and how I solved my problem. They tell me they want to be just like me. I never write them back. The women in here always stand aside when I walk by. They move to other tables in the cafeteria or go to the other side of the yard. Sometimes they get more daring, but it never lasts very long. I lost an eye to one last month. She added another life sentence to my stay in a month in solitary confinement. The psychiatrists here say I'm a danger to myself with revenge fantasies and delusions. But I wouldn't say they were wrong, though I'm certainly not a danger to myself. See,
in this world, you can bend and press upon people. You can get them when they're down and circle them. You can snarl and scream and get their throat in your teeth. But if you break them, they might snap back at you with their hackles raised and their own set of teeth bare. Because, see, life isn't about getting along with other people. It's not about sharing or loving one another. It's about surviving the dog-eat-dog, day-in and day-out shit-fest. It's about knowing when to lead and when to follow, or go running, whimpering with your tail tucked between your legs for the nearest hole. I refuse to go out whimpering. I refuse to fall prey. But most of all, I refuse it took Lobo to show me that. My name is Red, and I am the wolf mother, rabid, snarling bitch of the pack. And I will not be challenged, never again, not by Lobo or anyone. Well, as you can see, I had a pretty significant reason to cease correspondence with Red after that. It's not that the poor girl scared me, oh, no, far from it. It was more that, yeah, Red slightly scared me, listeners, I'm not going to deny that. But, all the same, I'm going to, once again, leave it up to you if Red is a real person out there, perhaps baking your pies for you, or perhaps waiting for March 23rd, 2014, to be released from prison after being found that she was both mistrialed due to insanity and actually has had nothing but good behavior since she's been incarcerated. Sure, there was that one little outburst, but, you know, maybe she was off her meds that day. That's a risk I think that we can afford to take, don't you? Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Dead Static. I am Jack LaCroix, your host with the most, and tune in for the next episode of SVU or the next episode of Dead Static, where I'll bring you yet more thrilling, well, I guess we can call it fiction. Good night, everyone.